Welcome, everyone, to another episode of What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is the radio show designed to highlight the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace trends that are shaping the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace around us. We find the guests that can speak intelligently about what's going on out there, and perhaps there's something that they say about the trends that are shaping their business that will give you and me, the listeners, some idea on how we can get better at whatever, just a little bit better at whatever it is that we do. Today's show is going to be kind of special for me, and I've been looking forward to this a while. That's because the focus of the show today is going to be on writing. And it's something that I'm really passionate about and can always get a little better at is my writing skills. It wasn't long ago that I had Watt Key in the studio with me, and I learned from Watt how he goes about writing the books that he publishes. Now, Watt is a fiction author and has had great success in the world of writing books, and learned a little bit from him how the book writing process works and how he sells his contracts, how he gets into agreements with his agents, etc. It was really very interesting. This show, though, is not going to be on the business of writing. It's going to be on the art or the process of writing. And I sit down with Watt Key as well as Rob Holbert, who is the editor of Lanyap Magazine, to talk about what his processes, what these two guys' processes of writing are. So we're going to do this by the three of us each are going to read a 500-word essay that says something that we all have in common, and that is taking our oldest child off to school. Watt Key and Rob Holbert and I have all recently gone through this in our life stages, so we agreed that we would write about this type of thing, read it on the air, and then discuss the process of writing with each other. Now, in truth, I'm not suited to hold a candle to these two guys. Watt Key has many different books in print, has won many different awards. Rob Holbert produces a weekly column, as well as the articles he writes for Lanyap, and is well known for his investigative journalism that he conducts through Lanyap Magazine. So these two guys are really good at what it is that they do, and I don't, frankly, belong with them. Nevertheless, because it's my radio show, and I get to pick who comes on the show and who reads what and who does what, I've got these two guys. They've agreed to come into the studio with me and talk about the business side of writing. Not the business of writing books, but how Watt and how Rob sit down and go about getting their writing done. I am a neophyte. I enjoy it, but I'm not getting paid to do it. So in this What's Working, we're going to talk about how these two guys and me go about writing the stuff that they write. Very interesting conversation of how do you make the rubber meet the road when you're a writer. When we come back from break, you'll be with What's Working. I'll have Watt Key and I'll have Rob Holbert in the studio with me. Now, both of these guys are in the business of writing, and Watt has certainly seen some great success from that, and Rob is in the business of doing it as well. And it makes me think about people that are in the business of kind of being professional, of being, subtly very good at what they do. Neither Rob nor Watt bang the drum about their expertise loud and clear and gather a lot of attention. They go subtly about their way doing a very professional job, which is exactly the way the professionals at Sandifer Wealth go about managing wealth as well, or your movement into wealth, or your departure from the workforce as you've taken some of the affluence of your 401k. Sandifer Wealth Management is not out there to bang the drum about how great and big they are and scream to the top of the hills. They very quietly, very professionally, and very capably manage the wealth of those that have learned how to build wealth, who save more than they spend, who have received some sort of inheritance, or are stepping out of the workplace into retirement with a nice 401k. You're going to meet very professional, well-heeled, perhaps, almost like family members. Sandifer Wealth Management. Take a look. Sandifer Wealth Management. Find them online. They have an online form you can fill out or give them a call. After this break, we'll be back to talk about writing.
I'm Eric Cromwell. The law firm of Cromwell & Associates can help guide your decisions regarding the life you've created with estate planning tools like wills and trusts. We've planned meetings with first-generation business owners and large multi-generational family groups. With locations in Mobile and Fairhope, we can assist you and your family through every stage of life. To learn more, call 251-605-9075 or find Cromwell & Associates on Facebook.
At Spring Hill Toyota, it's just that easy. From our three-day exchange to free car washes, the benefits of the Spring Hill Advantage make the choice easy to see. We make it easy to own. Every vehicle comes with Toyota Care, plus our no-cost maintenance plan with free tire rotations and oil changes for 4 years. Get peace of mind with free roadside assistance 24/7. And don't forget, it's easy to buy your car 100% online. Visit springhilltoyota.com today. It's just that easy.
What's Working with Cam Marston is brought to you by Stella Artois Beer, now offering the purchase of the Stella Artois Chalice, a beautiful stemmed glass with the Stella logo. The purchase of each Stella Artois Chalice provides 5 years of clean water for someone in one of 13 developing countries around the world. Learn more at stellaartois.com. Stella Artois. Find it wherever fine beer is sold.
A cool thing happened back in 64. That's when Keith Air Conditioning opened their doors.
Remy Halo has been proven to be 99% effective against COVID-19. And now you can have a Remy Halo air purification system installed with 0% financing for 18 months. When it comes to keeping your home comfortable and safe, turn to the names you trust, Keith and Carrier.
Mobile's leading name in comfort since 1964.
License number 83731.
You're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm in the studio today with Rob Holbert and Watt Key. We're talking about the business of writing. Everyone out there wants to be a writer. However, what I know is actually putting the words on paper and getting people to read it, and more importantly, getting people to buy it, is much more difficult. We're going to start this session by reading a 500-word commentary each one of us has prepared that we all kind of have in common. We're all about the same age, and that thing in common is taking our oldest off to school. Rob, you're first.
It was while watching the Coen Brothers classic, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, that the thought first popped into my head that I should name any future son I might have Ulysses. The movie's a comedic take on Homer's Odyssey, set in the 1930s Mississippi with George Clooney playing the crafty Ulysses Everett McGill to perfection. It had me thinking about the journey of life or some other high-minded concept involving the trials and tribulations we all face. Then I forgot about it. Years later, when having a little boy became a reality, we were batting names around and I was flipping through the baby name book, mostly trying out the most ridiculous ones I could find. In the U's, I hit pay dirt for weird names. The 21st letter of the alphabet was rich with odd and unpronounceable names. Then I reached Ulysses. And that thought popped back in my head. I jokingly started calling our unborn child Ulysses, to the point that it stuck. There was fear from his mother the other kids would call him you sissy, but I assured her that if he was the kind of kid who got picked on by others, it wouldn't matter if his name was Switchblade. Still, we gave him the safety middle name of David, just in case. But I just knew the name wouldn't be too big for him, and it would serve to remind him in times of trouble that all is not lost, or something like that. And he's worn it well. Actually, he loves having a unique name, although he gets too worked up when people mispronounce it or assume he's named after a commander in the War of Northern Aggression. Ulysses and his sister Ursula, I got her name from a James Bond movie, are both blessed with great athletic abilities, which I like to think come from me, but more likely are from their maternal grandfather, who was a professional football player. So let's just say the jury's still out on that one. Early in life, my son became obsessed with sports and started talking about wanting to be a college athlete. He zeroed in on basketball and worked nonstop to become a really good player, but it wasn't in the cards. For whatever reasons, he was never picked for his high school team and he was crushed. So he went out for track instead and decided to start throwing a long metal pole. And he was good at it. A kid named Ulysses throwing a spear? It's as if the baby name book saw this coming all along. He worked long and hard, won a state championship, and last week I dropped him off at the University of Memphis, where his long-stated dream of being a Division I college athlete has become reality. I cried like a baby as I prepared to leave his dorm, proud and sad at the same time. His odyssey has begun in earnest. The baby name book may know where life will take him, but Dad will just have to see how it all unfolds. But I have no doubt his journey will be epic.
Very nice. Very nice. So, Rob, your writing is from the point of view of nonfiction. You're an investigative journalist in a world where they are hard to find right now, quite frankly. And you're the only one in the state of Alabama, to my opinion, that's asking hard questions of anybody out there. But you've got to sell these words. Talk to me about that.
Well, yeah, I think it's... I'm fortunate that I own a newspaper now, but we had to sell the words by getting people to buy the newspaper and read it. I mean, and to buy advertising. I think for us, for me, I just think truth is what sells, and that's truth that it reaches people. Obviously, when you're writing an investigative piece, truth is truth. You're trying to dig things up that people don't have. I've been a columnist since I was 22 years old as well. And writing a column, truth is often, it's truth. It's verifiable truth, but it's also the truth of what people feel and what they recognize. Something like that I just wrote, it has to ring true to you as a parent, I think.
How do you go about your writing? I mean, there are people out there that want to write. There are people out there that have to write proposals for their business. And it's often described as the most difficult part of their work. What is your process?
My process, the one thing I always tell writers, revision is really important. Rereading your stuff, it's so important. Even if you've written for years, you write it once, and if you go back and look at it, you're going to make changes. And if you go back and do it again, you're going to make more changes. And I think eventually that gets the things out of it that it needs that don't need to be there. Hopefully, you tighten up the piece. I like tight writing. The word "that" drives me crazy. I'm just every time I write it, I need it, and so it's just things that tighten writing up. I like it tight. I like to make sure that it is, that it flows, and I try to read it in a voice. When I try to hear it when I read it in my head. Can you read this? Does it make sense? And I edit all day too. I edit a lot. So that's part of it as well, is just trying to make other people's writing flow as well.
Who edits you? Do you have a third party?
Ashley's my primary editor. Ashley Trice, my business partner, edits most of my stuff. We have a copy editor as well.
So if you didn't have the constraints of having to do the investigative journalism part of it, how would your writing be different?
I mean, I would love to write a book. I mean, I've written 100 pages of a book, but I never finished it. And it's been sitting there for 20 years. It's a book about my first job in journalism. And I think it would be great to finish that one day. But there's nothing compelling me to do it. So, yeah, I would love to sit down and write those types of things. It would be fun to do, I think. But I also just, I love investigative journalism. It really is. The challenge is just a lot of fun to me.
I saw a documentary not long ago, and it made me think of you. And it was about some sort of hospital system in the Ukraine. Believe it or not, there is a documentary on hospital systems in the Ukraine. But the guy said this. He was an investigative journalist. His primary role was a sports reporter. But they saw this need to ask tough questions. And his comment was this. When investigative journalists stop asking questions of the institutions, the institutions begin to abuse the citizens that they serve. And that's exactly what's going on in your pieces on the University of Alabama payroll system. I look at that and think, this is exactly what's happening. I want to be on the payroll system, right? Yeah. I want to get paid for doing little or to nothing. This sounds like a sweet gig.
It is a sweet gig.
On the other side, I want this to stop. These are my tax dollars. you've got to convey the urgency of this through the words that you choose in your newspaper and the significance of this. It's a big responsibility. When you sit down and begin to write this, do you recognize the responsibility, or is it something that you say, you know, I'm just going to tell the truth, as you said a moment ago?
No, I think you recognize the responsibility when you're doing that stuff. I mean, it's I think this is a very important story. I think it's the most important story I've written in my career at this point. I mean, it's the biggest story probably. Where it will end up, I think, you know, it's a big story if anybody pays attention to it. That's the big question. You know, it's definitely being paid attention to by a lot of people around the state, but will anybody in power react to it? I don't know. But there's a lot more to come with it. But it is as I do this and I start looking at it, the amount of corruption in our state government and at that level is mind-blowing to me. And it is, we are dealing with people, the ethics, the unethical behavior at the university level, the unethical behavior by the Board of Trustees that are in bed with these guys. You have the State Ethics Commission that, you know, a story I wrote with that uncovered his unethical behavior. So we've got an unethical behavior over there. He is handicapped by his own behavior. And, you know, it's just a matter of who's going to do this, who's going to look into it. And who's going to do something about it? The legislature? I've had a lot of people call me from the legislature and say, hey, you know, these are terrible things that are going on. Are they going to do anything about it? I don't know. And the other part about it that's really fascinating to me is there's no other media in this state that has written a word about any of this.
That is what shocks me so much.
No, it's mind-blowing.
You've opened a vein that would seem like the media would be dying to jump into this vein, and no one's saying anything. But let's get back to the writing.
Yeah.
What's the tool? What's the primary tool you use? Is it the questions that you ask that generate the story, or is it the actual putting the words down? What is the most important part of what you do?
I mean, I think when you talk about the questions, you know, when you're doing investigative journalism, you've got to ask tough questions. You know, it's not easy. You're talking to people who aren't happy that you're talking to them or writing them. You know, most of the time these days they won't even talk to you. So you're writing emails and doing things and they won't respond or whatever. And it gets pretty tough and can get a little bit combative. When you do get them on the phone, they're not happy to be on the phone with you. So the questions are important. And what material comes out of that really dictates, you know, at that point, then I start thinking about what's the impact? What's the most impactful thing I can start with? Because that's what gets people reading it to me. You know, you've got to have... You know, it's the old inverted pyramid style of writing in journalism, but it is, I need to tell these people up front why this is going to be a good story, an interesting story. And you have to make sure the writing it needs to sing. It needs to be good enough to get somebody to finish that, what are often very long pieces at this point.
So Quinn Hillier, who's a friend of everybody here, I think, tells me the opening sentence and the closing sentence are the most important thing he writes, and he doesn't start the column until he's figured out the open and close. Do you do the same?
I don't usually know what the close is going to be, but I kind of have an idea. And it's, you know, when you're writing a column, there's, you know, a lot of us use the same kind of trick, which is a little bit of a circle back. I mean, I did it in this piece. You know, you circle back to something you referenced earlier. That's pretty standard column writing 101. But my column I wrote this week, I wrote the column and then I realized that needed a whole different beginning to it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went and just added a few sentences at the beginning and kind of made it flow.
When we come back from break, we'll have Watt Key. Oh, wait, you're batting cleanup, aren't you?
It's up to you.
When we come back from break, I'll read my 500 words, and we'll talk a little bit about what a hobbyist writer does. I'm in the studio with two professional writers, and we'll give the hobbyist point of view. When we're back, you're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston.
I'm
I'm Paul Lewis, General Manager for Lewis Construction. Many of our commercial buildings you drive by daily on both sides of the bay are the fruits of our client relationships since our beginning in the early 80s. It is our mission to bring value to our clients, from retrofits to ground-up construction and everything in between. We have more advocates than any of our competitors who have been in business twice as long. Same with repeat business, same with referrals. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com and let's talk about your next commercial project.
Hi, I'm David Nelson, brewmaster and owner of Braided River Brewing in downtown Mobile. We make drinkable, flavorful craft beer perfect for life on the Gulf Coast. So pick up one of our six packs before your next adventure or stop by our tap room for a relaxing afternoon with friends. Follow us on social media for the latest beer releases and events and ask for a Braided River at your favorite bars and restaurants. Thanks for your support. We look forward to sharing our beers with you.
This is Cam Marston, and I'm with Cajun Mike of E3 Termite and Pest Control. Cajun Mike, if a homeowner thinks they have termites, do you offer inspections? What about someone buying a new home? Can you come in and take a look and see if there are termites in their new home?
Yeah, basically what we would do on a home above and beyond anyone else is we actually do a thorough inspection. But above that, we will use infrared imaging that will allow us to see problems in the wall. And at times can tell us if there's anything going on.
That's fantastic, Cajun Mike. How can people find you?
They can find me at e3pest.com.
That's the letter E, the number 3, pest.com.
King Solomon wrote, "Without consultation, plans are frustrated. But with many counselors, they succeed." The law firm of Cromwell & Associates has the legal counsel that can help your business succeed with experience in LLCs, corporations, and tax. I'm Eric Cromwell. Our law firm has locations in Mobile and Fairhope. Call 251-605-9075 or search for Cromwell & Associates on Facebook. And let's discuss how we can help you.
Back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm in the studio today. Watt Key is a fiction writer known across the world for his stories. Rob Holbert is a editor for Lanyap magazine, known across the area for his investigative journalism. Each of us has prepared 500 words about a topic that we all have in common, and our goal is to talk about what it is that we do when it comes to creating the pieces. I'm up next, and the topic, if you didn't hear segment two, is dropping off the oldest at college, something that the three of us have done recently. My column is broadcast on Alabama Public Radio Friday mornings and afternoons, and this is the one that was broadcast last week that I wrote for this interview here today, and I'm going to do my best to get through this thing because it was a train wreck writing it and recording it. Took me 19 takes to get this thing right. Here we go. A quote that I've always liked goes something like this: "You've been a successful parent when your child, as an adult, wants you but doesn't need you." My wife and I dropped our oldest child at Ole Miss this past weekend. As a college freshman, she's not quite an adult, so the jury's still out on whether we've been successful or not. Will she want us but not need us, or need us but not want us? Time will tell. For years, I boasted loudly that when I dropped my children at college, it would be a simple, practical, unemotional affair. It's not a reason to get sappy. It's a celebration. My parents showed no emotion when they dropped me at college, I'd say. However, my parents told me recently that after they left me at college, they cried the whole way home. I never knew this. In the past few years, though, as this day approached, I realized how wrong I was about being unemotional, and I stopped making this boast. Then, gradually, began walking the boast back, and then ultimately, doing a 180-degree about-face to the point of declaring myself a hypocrite and admitting that this college drop-off event would be an emotional affair and that I would be a complete basket case. And I did not disappoint. I kept it together pretty well most of the weekend. My wife and I would make eye contact and we'd get teary, but it wouldn't last long and there was work to do. And after a long day of moving her in, we all went to dinner Saturday night, and I dropped my daughter at her dorm for her first night there, and I couldn't talk as we drove away. Sunday, though, the waterworks really started. There would be one less person climbing out of the car when we got home, an empty chair at the kitchen table that night, one fewer groggy heads to ready for school the next day. My daughter and I said goodbye on the curb in front of a coffee shop on the square. I had a long list of hopes and praises for her prepared in my head, but I couldn't speak. I held her tightly, I kissed her forehead, and I looked through my tear-filled eyes into hers, forced a smile, and walked to the car. My wife and kids did the same. When a child becomes an adult, it's the child that determines the intimacy of the relationship with their parent. The child sets the terms. What will this look like with my daughter and me? What will she want from me? Will she even want me? Or will she just need me? So many thoughts. And with each new thought, more wet eyes. Monday morning, I texted her. Hey, sweetie, thinking about you. Do you need anything? No, Dad, nothing. Thanks. Then a moment later. Hey, Dad, I miss you. More waterworks. Maybe she'll want me.
Good job, Cam.
That's beautiful. I love it.
I've had more feedback on that commentary than the nearly 200 I've done for public radio over the past 4 years. I think it hit a vein.
It did. Well, you got me almost, got me tearing up a little bit here. It was good. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. That's, you know, in my opinion, the things that I write are designed to evoke an emotion.
Yeah, it did. You definitely captured that feeling I had, at least.
That's why I'm not real good at writing sappy things, because I'll get emotional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you avoid it. As a professional, you avoid sappy things due to the emotions.
I don't know that I so much. I would avoid writing it and reading it out loud because I don't know that I would be able to get through it. You have a pretty good delivery voice, and you're used to reading things online, you know, on podcasts and that type. I'm not used to reading things out loud. And so, you know, it would be hard for me to do an emotional piece.
I would have to say that, you know, I wrote mine differently because I was worried I would cry in the middle of it if I wrote something that was more about what we did that day and walking around. Because I, even as I wrote it, I started getting a little, you know, a little teared up about it. And then just listening to yours, I was like, you know, I could. It was weird. I mean, you know, leaving him there, I did. I cried. I mean, I was like, I'll be all right. And then, you know, he's been joking for weeks. You're gonna cry when I leave. And I'm like, you know. He's holding me. He's like, you're a good dad. You know, it's like,
oh my goodness,
like I'm a good dog. Or something. Yeah,
patting you on the head and scratching you less, behind the ears, saying you've been loyal.
Yeah,
you've
been good. I gotta go. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, Cam, you said that you had you struggled writing this piece. What was the hardest part about it for you?
I wanted to honor my daughter.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a time stamp for the Marston family. That is this moment in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's recorded and it's broadcast and it was aired last week. But I wanted something that in the future I'd be able to pull that back and say, that's a moment in time that I remember clearly, and wanted to really celebrate my daughter in that moment and let her know how important that was to us. And I think I have a little bit of sap in me. Heck, let me be clear. I have a ton of it. And in fact, it's hard to hold it back more often than not. But I wanted to make sure she understood the significance of the moment in a way that it's important to me, because she knows how hard I work on these commentaries for the radio every week. And this is one that was for her for the radio that week.
Did you send it to her before you read it?
No.
Has she seen it yet or heard it?
I sent her the recording.
Yeah.
I sent her the podcast, and she replied back, great, I have to redo my makeup before I leave today, which I consider a small victory.
That is.
Well, you said it took you, I think, 19 takes. Was that to record it or to write it?
No. For this one, for me, the introduction and the end were clear, and I had to fill in the middle.
So it's editing.
It was the editing, and it was going back and forth. But the 19 takes were to get through it without choking up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm alone in my office. It must have been a pitiful sight if there had been a hidden camera. I'm alone in my home studio reading this thing with a napkin wiping my eyes and then cussing like a sailor because I messed it up again, and I've got to start from the top. I don't have an editor. I got to get it right on 3 minutes of good content.
So how long did it take you to do your first draft? Versus the editing?
It's a good question. I'm guessing it took me probably 30 minutes to do the first draft. This thing was, most of them take longer. This one was pretty clear. I began writing this as we rode away from campus that day. Do you do the same?
Sometimes I have ideas that I have in folders that I'll go to if I don't have anything that I'm really eager to do.
Yeah.
But I do have some ideas that I'm like, as soon as I get home, I got to do this, and I'll knock it out. And they come out very, they're quick. But the editing, like Rob was saying, I mean, the revision process is what takes the longest. You know, I'll write a like this story, I probably wrote it in a couple of hours and then spent, four times that revising it, and I'll revise it some more before it's really ready.
So I have to tell the listeners here, I have to admire these guys. Everything that they've written likely has a market out there that you've prepared for this. Watt, of course, has written something that we'll get into in the next segment that he's already tried to figure out how to sell. Mine is a hobby. And it's a different approach to things. Now, let's talk about the editing process. One of the best books on writing that I've read is Stephen King's On Writing. And I think you and I referenced this when you were in the studio with me last time. He says, if I remember that book correctly, he tries to edit 30% of his content out. He tries to reduce everything he's written by 30%, and then it goes to the editor. Is that about right for you, Watt?
I've never thought of it that way because I'm constantly taking stuff out. Like I'll do a paragraph and then I'll go back and read it and I'll delete a couple of sentences. But yes, the end product will definitely be shorter than the original draft. I mean, you're tightening, as Rob would say, during the revision process, and it's going to end up, being shorter and taking a lot out.
Do you try to reduce by 30%, Rob? Have you ever given 30%? Consideration to that?
Pretty much when I finish a column, it's usually about 1,200 words. I try to get it in the paper somewhere, about 1,100 words or maybe even closer to 1,000. So, I'd like to, definitely try to reduce. I think writing almost always ends up being better if you go through it, if you really come back at the end of the day and say, I've had fewer words in here and have said the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that one of my jobs when I lived in Washington, D.C., and I left Capitol Hill, I went and I was a ghostwriter, and I wrote for newspapers all over the country. I wrote pieces that would appear in the top 100 papers in the country. And my bosses would come in and, I've got 900 words. Okay. Great, but I need to have this idea, but you can't, so I have to take this out, but I've got to get it all back in there. So I've got to put all this stuff, more stuff into this 900 words. I hated working for those people, but I probably learned more about writing. And, we got published in every big paper in the country. I felt more confident in my writing doing that. And I learned a lot about taking stuff out and really just tightening the writing. And that was a big deal.
30% sounds pretty strong.
That's strong. That's real strong. 30% is rough, man.
That is rough. I was shocked to read that, which is, I think, why the stat remains in my head, to think that you're going to work as hard as he does or any one of us does to get the writing correct and then cut 30% out.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I can't imagine writing a 1,000-word column and then saying I'm going to take 300 words out of it. That would be tough.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of ideas lost, I think, but it, it's I could see if you said you have to take 300 words out of it, I could do it, and it would be, but I don't know that it would touch on all the same things.
Yeah. Let's go to break. We're going to come back from break. We're going to have Watt Key up. Watt, of course, is incapable of writing nonfiction. The man lives in the fiction world, and he's going to read his 500 words on taking his oldest off to college. We're in the studio today. You're listening to What's Working. We'll be right back.
At Roy Lewis Construction, we're in the business of adding value. Whether it's working with you to meet your unique business needs or making investments in our community in lasting ways, providing unparalleled value and quality in every commercial construction project. When planning your next commercial project, reach out to Roy Lewis Construction. We'll pair you with a designer that best suits your project needs and work with that designer to balance the best architectural outcome with the best budget outcome. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com. Building legacies, one relationship at a time.
At Spring Hill Toyota, it's just that easy. From our three-day exchange to free car washes, the benefits of the Spring Hill Advantage make the choice easy to see. We make it easy to own. Every vehicle comes with Toyota Care, plus
Plus, our no-cost maintenance plan with free tire rotations and oil changes for 4 years. Get peace of mind with free roadside assistance 24/7. And don't forget, it's easy to buy your car 100% online. Visit SpringHillToyota.com today. It's just that easy.
Think about how people really see you. The kid at the drive-thru just sees a coffee drinker.
Please pull forward.
Your local barista sees the person who loves a smiley face in their latte.
See you next time.
It's kind of the same way with insurance. Other insurance companies just see a customer, but a State Farm agent sees more. They see you as a neighbor. Your State Farm agent is here to get to know who you really are so they can help life go right.
Call me, State Farm agent Allison Horner in Mobile at 666-1616.
I'm David Nelson, brewmaster and owner of Braided River Brewing. We want beer that goes along no matter where the adventure takes us and that doesn't make us choose between great beer and drinkability. We're drawn to the Delta and united by beer because to us, the best way to celebrate the Delta is to slow down and savor the moments and the beer together. Come visit our tap room in downtown Mobile and ask for us at your favorite bar or restaurant. Visit online at braidedriverbrewing.com.
We're back. You're listening to What's Working. Up next in the Writer's Symposium, for lack of a better term, Watt Key. You may be familiar with Watt. He was on the show just a few weeks ago. A fiction writer, does very well. The man has written the great American novel, and he's prepared something for us today. That's your intro, Watt. When it gets quiet, it's your turn.
Thank you, Cam. Okay, as you know, I told you I cheated a little bit.
Yeah.
I did not write a nonfiction piece, but this is a family relationship piece, fiction, and it's called The Bonobo. And this is the first time that it has not been in print, so this is the first time anybody's heard it. It's a work in process. Here we go, The Bonobo. I knew there would come a time when my son asked me about his father. He is 8 years old now, though relatively immature owing to his blindness. He has been completely dependent on me for his care and education all but 6 months of his life. In the evening, he often lies next to me in bed while I read to him from the Quran. I put my arm around him, and he leans his head against my breast and listens. It was on such a night that he finally asked. I had been preparing my answer for years. How did Father die? I put the book down and gave him a squeeze. He died doing the work that he loved, I said. What kind of work was it? He was a scientist, a very smart one. He studied the bonobo. What's that? They are a kind of monkey, very smart monkeys. What did he do to them? He had a laboratory in the back of our house. That's like an office for a scientist. He took the bonobo when they were babies and taught them things. He read them books and hooked wires up to their heads and had computers talk to them. He made them smarter. I don't know the laboratory. It's locked now. No one goes there anymore. Did Father hurt the monkeys? Yes, many of them died. That sounds mean. Sometimes sacrifices have to be made for the better good. I don't understand. Sometimes things have to die so that we can learn how to make more things live. Did any of the bonobo get smarter? Yes, some of them did. Some of them learned to read and talk. That's silly. I chuckled. Yes, it sounds silly, but it was amazing. Your father was an amazing man. Well, how did he die teaching bonobo to read and talk? I stroked his blonde hair. I wanted him to know the truth, but I wanted to tell it carefully, in a way that wouldn't frighten him, in a way that he would understand. The bonobo began to learn about all of the things humans had, and they began to want these things. They wanted to be let out of their cages. They wanted to eat better food. They wanted to live in houses and be clean and wear clothes. They wanted all the things people had. But your father wouldn't give them these things. Because they weren't really people? That's right. But it made them angry. One night, a really smart bonobo figured out how to escape from her cage. She hid under an operating table until morning. When your father came into the laboratory, she stabbed him with one of his knives. And he died? Yes, she killed him. For a moment, my son was silent with his thoughts. That's kind of scary, he said. It was all very unexpected. When did you find out? Well, the bonobo wasn't done. Your father had left the door to the laboratory open, and the bonobo walked into the house. She was still very angry at the way your father had treated her. Because he wouldn't give her things? That's right, because now she was as smart as a person, but he had continued to treat her like a monkey. Did the bonobo come into your room? She went into your room. She got you out of bed and took you back to the laboratory. Then she poured something into your eyes to make you blind. The bonobo did it? That's right. I thought I was born this way. No, you were not always blind. How old was I? About 6 months old. Did you hear me crying? Yes, I did. Did you come save me? Yes, I saved you. Did you kill the monkey? I killed the monkey. The boy was silent again. I don't like bonobo. You don't have to be afraid of them anymore. What do they look like? I took his soft hand and lifted it to his cheek. They look a lot like people. My son felt his lips and his nose and his eyes, imagining the bonobo. Then he sat up and turned and put his hand to my cheek. He rubbed my lips and my nose and my cheeks. Will I have hair on my face one day? Yes, when you are older. What about my nose? It feels different than yours. You will change as you grow older. He pressed his fingers to my mouth. I opened it and let him rub my teeth. Will I have sharp teeth? Maybe. And wear a burqa when I go outside? Burqas are only for women of our religion. So people don't see your face? That's right, son. So people don't see my face.
Good Lord.
That's a little experimental. So hopefully people get it. You know, it has a twist. And so, you know, the big twist was that she's a bonobo.
Right.
And she's the one that she's a monkey and she killed his dad and apparently his mother. And so, you know, that's what I do. And, you know, an entertaining piece with a twist. I don't always have a twist like that. Sometimes it's just a happy ending. That one doesn't have one.
That's fantastic, though. And the question has got to be, where did this come from? I mean, where did the Quran part of it come from? Where did the your mind must race all the time? Everything is content for you. Everything's got to be content. I'm answering your question. Where did it come from?
Well, the Quran, I was starting to think about how could this happen. Obviously, it could really happen, but you've got somebody that's posing as his mother, and obviously he's old enough to where he would have to go to school. So how does she take him to school? Well, maybe she can wear a burqa, and while she wears a burqa, maybe she's decided that she's going to be Muslim as part of her cover to wear the burqa. But then I imagined sort of a stooped over mother figure in a burqa taking their son to school. And, you know, how can he not know it? Well, I guess he's got to be blind. How could he be blind? Well, she would blind him as a baby so he wouldn't find out. So you just kind of make it all work and put in the pieces.
I'm sort of it's really great. It was wonderful to listen to you read it. And it was very engaging. But I also am sitting here thinking, how did he get from dropping your kid off to college to a murder monkey?
That's a good question. The assignment was something about dropping kids off to college, and you've come into a murder monkey.
How does this brain work?
Well, that's exactly right.
This was a nice little family tale. Yeah. You know? Parent talking to their child.
Yeah. When you sit down to write, what are you always thinking? What makes this sellable?
Yes, in a way, not exactly like that. I start off writing what I want to write a story that I would like and that I would like to read, and that usually translates into it being saleable. If I'm writing and I'm bored with the story, the reader's going to be bored. So I'll either, you know, come back to it later or just never finish it.
That is such a true statement. You know, even when I'm editing, you know, news stories and I'm looking at them going, this is boring.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to read this if it's boring.
It translates.
And it is. I mean, if you're bored by it, who's going to be excited by it?
And I think a lot of that's what people call writer's block too.
Yeah.
To me, writer's block in a lot of cases, in most cases, is that you are bored with your story. Your characters have not taken over, and you've come against a technical wall. Your structure's wrong. You just don't like your characters. You don't like what you're writing about. You know, when I write real heavy, like love scenes. I'm terrible at love scenes, and if I try to write one, then I'll probably it'll probably kill the book because I'll just feel it's completely fake, and you know I can't write that kind of thing. So
tell me this: where does this go from here? You write a piece like this. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's your process for getting it published?
So I'll publish this in a book of short horror stories.
Okay.
At some point. Yeah. And so I don't know when you'll see it, but I'll be putting it in a collection at some point.
Very cool. That's cool, man. It's a neat idea. And it's one of those things you're reading as you're reading it. You know, I'm definitely in it. I'm like, well, what is going on? You know?
Absolutely. The scene is playing out very clearly in my head, the descriptions and everything where I could see this playing out. And there's a part of me that wants to be a part of the story. There's another part of me that wants to step back and go, how is he doing this?
Yeah.
How has he captured me?
Yeah, that's it too. But I'm always, when I watch movies, if I watch any kind of movie that's a horror story or it's got a twist or whatever, I'm always trying to figure it out ahead of time. You know, it drives my wife crazy. And then, so that's the whole time you're reading, I'm like, where's this going? What is this? You know, how's it going to happen? And so you tricked me, you know, at the end, and that worked.
Short stories are hard.
Yeah.
Like you said, they've got to be tight and you know, real concise. And, you end up boiling it down to every word matters in these short stories.
I could see that story that you wrote becoming a movie.
Absolutely.
I could see that. You know, it just
they need a few more pages.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. I mean, the idea is there. I think
the seeds are there for a heck of a movie. I agree. Yeah. I want a good answer on how does your brain work?
Gosh, I always start off with I'll give you an example. So the other day I'm over the bay and I'm standing out. It's dark outside. I've walked outside and in Point Clear, it's probably 10 o'clock at night and it's real dark out there. And my neighbor two houses down had left their light on at the end of the dock, and it kind of lit up their crabbing wharf, which was kind of strange because I knew they weren't home. So I'm standing there on the bulkhead looking out across the water at this light out there, and I'm thinking, what if I saw something standing on that dock in that light and it was staring back at me, and then all of a sudden it dove off in my direction into the darkness as if it was coming after me, you know? And so I wrote a whole story based on around that vision. And I ended up – this actually might have worked. It was a little too long. But when we did take our daughter to college, my wife Katie and I stayed up in the in North Alabama, kind of in the foothills, the Appalachians. And I wrote a story about us being up there, fictional us, after we drop our kid off at school. And the man in the relation – you know, the man, me, I guess – goes outside at night to have a drink, and he looks across a meadow, and there's an old barn, and there's a creature standing in this old utility light of the barn, and all of a sudden it starts running out of the light toward him across the meadow.
Yeah.
And it just goes on after that.
Are your dreams anticlimactic to your living, wakeful imagination? Do you dream at night to relax?
I don't dream as much as I'd like to. I don't dream many story ideas. Every now and then I will have a dream that turns into a story, but most of the time they're not as good as I thought they were once my mind clears.
Watt Key, fiction writer, making a living doing it. Watt, thank you for your time. Wonderful job.
Thanks for having me.
Rob, nonfiction world, investigative journalism, makes money with his words just as well. Rob, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back after this break with final comments. You're listening to What's Working.
This is Cam Marston. The Keith family has provided service to my heating and cooling system since my family and I moved into our home 12 years ago. And today, Keith Air Conditioning offers 0% financing for up to 60 months on new installations, making a new heating or cooling system for your home even easier to come by. Give them a call or find them online and let them come work their magic. Keith and Carrier, turn to the experts.
What's Working with Cam Marston is brought to you by Stella Artois Beer. Stella Artois is a perfect beer for celebration. Nothing caps off a big sale, hitting your incentive goals, or a profitable quarter like a round of Stella's. Brewed first in 1708 as a special Christmas brew, today Stella is a gift for everyone to enjoy year-round. Stella Artois. Find it wherever fine beer is sold.
This is Cam Marston with Cajun Mike of E3 Termite and Pest Control. Cajun Mike, houses on pilings can have termites eat their way up inside the piling and enter the house. The homeowner never knows about it, but your company offers protection. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Cam. Basically, what we have designed is a program, and what we do is we will actually drill to the center of the pilings and put a product in the center that will stop the termites from coming up into the home.
Stucco exteriors as well?
Correct.
How can people find you, Cajun Mike?
They can find me at e3pest.com.
That's the letter E, the number 3, pest.com.
When you make the right decision, it feels good, like picking the perfect accent rug or choosing a good night's sleep over an all-night crime show binge. It feels really good to make the right insurance decision, too. I'm State Farm Agent Allison Horner, and that's why I'm right here in Mobile to help you select the right protection at the right price. I'll make sure you understand your State Farm coverages so you'll know what to expect if the unexpected happens. With me as your State Farm agent, it's easy to make the right choice. You can come by, call, or click AllisonHorner.com. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is Jay Stubbs with Concourse Financial, and when I'm not working on an insurance plan with a financial advisor, I'm listening to What's Working with Cam Marston. Now back to the show.
Well, that was fun for me. I mean, a lot of fun. I enjoy writing, and my piece that I read to you, read on the show, as you heard, is broadcast weekly on Alabama Public Radio. I write these things for public radio there on Friday mornings and afternoons, and I really enjoy it. There's a lot of pleasure in me sitting down and doing that, but I do it. It's not a job. It's a hobby. And these two other guys, I mean, it's a job, and really interesting to hear how they go about it. One of the things, and I don't remember if the microphones were on when we discussed this, one of the things so powerful is deadlines. And in fact, I was listening to a podcast not long ago on the value of deadlines, but how deadlines really can motivate all of us, certainly the three of us, into getting our work done. Though I do not have a job and I'm not paid nor under contract to write these commentaries, I know that if I don't have them there Thursday midday, if I don't send them to Tuscaloosa Thursday midday, they don't get broadcast. So it's a deadline that I impose upon myself. But both Watt and Rob place deadlines upon themselves to get their work done. And though we groan about them, deadlines, they really are very valuable and helpful tools due to the very nature of putting the pressure on us. Well, that's another show for this week, folks. We'll have another one next week. John Thompson with Ion Digital, EYEON Digital, is the show's producer. I hope you'll check us out on social media. Look for Cam Marston, or in some social media places, Cam Marston 1. Some other SOB took the name Cam Marston before I could get it. Follow us online. Follow us on social media. And you can find these shows at whatsworkingcam.com, where you can listen to them again or forward them on to other people. Have a good week, everybody.